The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Some 80,000 migrants are on their way to the southern border. And you know what? The Biden administration is in on it. Why Southwest Airlines backed down, even while denying that this shutdown had anything to do with COVID? Representative Devin Nunes is going to join me. We're going to talk about Biden's failures, but also how he's striking back at a dishonest media. And I'm going to conclude my discussion of Madison by showing the five ways in which he wanted to protect America from the tyranny of the majority. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
Some 80,000 to 90,000 migrants are on their way to our southern border. These are people coming from all over Central America, but they're also coming from other countries, from Eastern Europe, from China, from the far reaches of Asia. So this is, they know it's a porous border. And how do these large caravans make their way over large tracts of territory? We've known for some time that there are left-wing organizations facilitating their movement all along the way. These are people who get phone cards so they can contact family members. These are people who get medical services en route. And so this is facilitated by the U.S. left and by the international left. It's a conscious attempt to remake America in a very literal way, and of course to create a kind of left-wing enduring political advantage. But here's the point. You can't go through countries like Panama and Colombia. You can't go through the Darien Gap and show up, go all the way through Mexico and show up without governments cooperating. And why would these governments do it unless they knew that they had at least the tacit support of the Biden administration? Well, it turns out they do. There's a very interesting article here reporting by Fox News in which they point out that these governments are actually tipping off the Biden administration as to who's coming, how many are coming, who is coming, and even the details of the names of the people who are coming. Now, supposedly, this is for the Biden people to vet these people. But think about it. The Biden administration knows, even when people are hundreds of miles away, who they are. And what are they doing to stop them? Nothing. In fact, it's sort of like, let's get ready for these people to all show up. We're planning to let most of them in. We might send a few of them back, particularly for photo ops, while the media says, hey, look, yeah, see, yeah, we're enforcing the immigration laws. But of course, the idea is to take the rest of them and diffuse them throughout the country, particularly targeting swing states. So all of this, by the way, is supported and corroborated by a new edict issued by Secretary Mayorkas, the head of the Department of Homeland Security. There's a lot of kind of euphemistic mumbo jumbo in here. On the face of it, the idea here is that we're not going to send migrants home without, quote, taking into account, quote, the totality of the facts and circumstances. Now, as always, the details are in the fine print. The fine print doesn't come until the middle of page two. And here's the point. I'm now going to quote. The fact an individual is a removable non-citizen will not alone be the basis of an enforcement action against them. In other words, the fact that they're breaking the law is not sufficient to deport them, is not sufficient to refuse them entry. Breaking the law is okay, in other words. You have to have other problems. Like, for example, you have to have a long crime record, or you have to be a terrorist, a known terrorist, a member of a terrorist watch list. So, but if you're not one of those things, you're not a known member of MS-13, you're not a known bad actor. The very fact that here you are, you're breaking the law by the fact that you're crossing the border and you're not allowed to cross, you haven't gone through the immigration process. Basically, it is now U.S. policy, and they call it prosecutorial prosecutorial discretion. These guidelines will help us exercise our prosecutorial discretion to achieve justice. Justice. So there, look at the abuse of this term when we have immigration laws that are very generous, but are nevertheless being circumvented by these unjust officials. And in some ways, you can't blame entirely the migrants because they're coming with the full collusion of the Biden administration. It's an open invitation. Biden is saying, listen, tip us off when you're coming. We'll run a screen test. When you show up, we'll know who you are, or at least to the degree that we can. And if we don't really see any red flags, in you go. I mean, this is outrageous. It's really the end of American sovereignty because a country can't really subsist without having a check on its borders. I mean, think of even third world countries, ragtag countries that no one wants to go to, control their borders. But evidently we don't, and we don't as a matter of policy. We already have 11 million undocumented illegal aliens in America, and the Biden administration is pushing really hard to try to get these people on a path to citizenship. They tried to sneak this, by the way, into the infrastructure bill before the Senate parliamentarian said no go. Then they tried to sneak it in a second time, and again they were caught in the act, and so it hasn't worked this time, but they're confident they can make it work sometime. And so all of this is really driven not by any concern, no humanitarian concern for people in other countries. It's not driven by any meaningful understanding of who a refugee is. Many of these people are not facing political persecution. It's all cynical political calculation. And the best revenge for it is to make Biden and the Biden administration pay next year dearly at the ballot box. Guys, isn't it time for you to replace the towels in your home? Debbie and I have. We don't believe you can have too many towels. And we just can't stop ordering MyPillow towels. We've replaced the towels in the house with MyPillow towels. But now Mike Lindell has a special that we can't pass up. So we're kind of going crazy and ordering more for us and also for our family. Now, ordinary towels just don't seem to dry you very well anymore. They feel soft and lotiony in the store, but you take them home and they don't absorb. Why not? Because towel companies typically import the product. Then they add softeners that make the towels feel good, but they don't dry you very well. Now, Mike Lindell has solved this problem, I can testify. He has created the best towel company right here in the USA. MyPillow has proprietary technology to create towels that not only feel soft, but actually absorb and leave you feeling fresh and dry. MyPillow towels come with the MyPillow 60-day money-back guarantee. And for a limited time, Mike is offering a ridiculously good deal on his 6-piece towel set. The set includes, by the way, 2 bath towels, 2 hand towels, 2 washcloths, all, by the way, a great Christmas gift if you think about it. Who doesn't want or need towels? These towels are made with USA cotton. They're soft yet absorbent. Regularly $109.99, but now $39.99, a great deal. Go call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com. Make sure to use promo code D-I-N-E-S-H, Dinesh. Over the last several days, Southwest Airlines was rocked by a series of delays and cancellations. Almost 2,000 flights canceled or delayed, creating a major ruckus all over the country, especially at the various Southwest hubs, but also elsewhere. And there was speculation that this was a kind of silent strike by Southwest employees who kind of all decided, you know what, we're not going to show up. And Southwest emphatically denied this. The pilots' union said, no, that's not really what's going on. And Jen Psaki, of course, picks it up, the press secretary, and she goes, well, this is just a canard. It's just a rumor. It's been thoroughly refuted. By refuted, she means there's been a kind of official denial by Southwest. Now, even though the reasons given by Southwest, which were air traffic control issues and weather issues, didn't make any sense. Obviously, air traffic control issues affect all airlines. Obviously, weather issues affect all airlines. So why was Southwest in particular affected disproportionately, you might say? That can't be the full reason. Well, interestingly, the CEO of Southwest, Gary Kelly, was on TV. He was talking to George Stephanopoulos, I believe, he was on ABC News. And he said, well, first of all, he said this was really not about COVID. Now, even as he was saying this, another Southwest official, this is Mike Van de Ven, admitted that part of the problem for Southwest was, quote, staffing issues. I'm quoting him, "We're still not where we need to be on staffing, and in particular with flight crews." This sounds to me like the flight crews have decided to call in sick. Now, why would they do that? Well, they're doing that, I think it's pretty obvious, because they are pushing back against this vaccine mandate. Now, the Southwest CEO, Gary Kelly, says, very interestingly, he's backing down, by the way. He realizes this is a disaster. And he also realizes that even though he's denying this has anything to do with COVID, he goes, number one, I don't like the mandate. He says he doesn't support the mandate, but he says he kind of has to do it because the, quote, executive order from President Biden, quote, covers all the major airlines. Now, I don't know if this guy is being properly informed, because even though Biden said, I am going to do a federal mandate, there is no federal mandate in effect. Biden is, quote, in the process of doing it. He's instructed the OSHA, the Occupational Health and Safety and Health Administration. He's notified the Department of Labor. You know, you get about getting this stuff ready, but nothing from them, nothing from the White House. There is, in fact, no mandate in effect. Now, I don't know if there's been a sufficient media con about this. The media, oh, this vaccine mandate. And this poor guy, Gary Kelly, who doesn't really bother to, or at least he should consult with his own attorneys, hey, look and see what officially has come out of the White House. But he seems to be jumping before there's even a kind of executive order in effect. The best news, I think, is that Gary Kelly goes, listen, we're going to try to help our employees who don't like the mandate to get an accommodation for medical or religious reasons. In other words, to be able to not have to take the vaccine. And he goes, number two, he goes, no employee is going to be fired over not taking the vaccine. That, I think, is the heart of the matter, because, of course, this is the, you may almost call, tool of coercion that is being used. Hey, listen, if you don't comply, you're going to be out of a job. How are you going to pay your mortgage? How are you going to support your kids? So this is the bludgeoning that the Biden administration is hoping for. And Southwest, apparently having hurried down that road, is now pulling back a little bit. And I just hope that this is part of a larger kind of freedom thrust around the country, where we say, listen, inform us, give us the details, let us see some Nobel laureates talk about the beauties of mRNA technology, tell us why this is all a great idea. But if you try to bludgeon us, if you try to beat us into submission, we, a free people, are going to push back. Aches and pains come to everybody eventually, whether it's from the normal wear and tear of time or from injury. But we have a choice to feel trapped by aches and pains or to fight back against them. Now, the tools are different from a decade or more ago. Now there's 100% drug-free solution, Relief Factor. Relief Factor supplies, it supports your body's fight against inflammation that is the source of aches and pains. About 70% of the over 500,000 people who try Relief Factor order more. Why? Because it works for them. You have nothing to fear and everything to gain. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? Now, typically advertisers send us products and Debbie and I try them. Debbie's been suffering from frozen shoulder for a couple of years now. And well, she tried Relief Factor, and to her amazement, 2 weeks later, wow, she could lift her arm. Not only could she lift it, but it no longer hurt. Well, she got busy. She forgot to order more. So unfortunately, the pain came right back. So Debbie's resolution, I'll never be without Relief Factor again. We also had her aunt Karen try it. It worked so well for her that we've now purchased a subscription for her. You can benefit too. Your first step to becoming pain-free might just be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of just $19.95. Just try it. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246. Feel the difference. Hey guys, I'm really happy to welcome back to the podcast Congressman Devin Nunes, California's 22nd District, a member of the Committee on Intelligence, also a member of the Ways and Means Committee. Last year he published the book Countdown to Socialism. Devin, welcome to the podcast. The last time you were on at the very beginning of my podcast, you made the forecast that you feared that the Biden administration was going to be, in effect, Obama's third term. Now, here we are kind of 9-10 months in. Have your worst fears been realized?
I think so. And I think people are being able to see it in real time, because it's quite clear that Biden is on a decline. Harris is clearly incompetent. And let me just take Biden first. Biden's much worse than what we thought. If you go back in time, remember that it was Obama who had basically handpicked Kamala Harris, who has been a political apparatchik out here in California. I'm talking to you from California right now. We have a kind of a Soviet style system out here. One party rule, complete socialists. Everybody sees the AOCs of the world because they're on, they get all the social media and media, national media attention. But our state legislature here is full of socialists, hard left-wing socialists who have, you know, it's really inundated the legislature over the last decade. And so Harris has been kind of at the top of that. She's always been hand-selected to move up. She was elected to be a district attorney, then appointed basically as attorney general, U.S. senator. She was the party's nominee with really no opposition. And so when you have a state that's 60, 65% left wing, she was easily elected. So she was never challenged. Obama, this has not been reported on a lot because I think it's kind of an embarrassing stain on the Obama regime. They hand selected her to be the heir apparent to Obama. They put in somewhere in excess of $100 million, and then she proceeded to have to drop out of the race before the first ballots were cast because it was going to be a complete embarrassment, a complete disaster. Now, they then had to go prop Biden up, Weekend at Bernie style, to stop Bernie Sanders from becoming their nominee. And that's why everybody was always speculating who was going to be the vice president. I said from the very beginning, it's obvious who it's going to be. It's going to be Kamala Harris. So all of the folks that were involved in the Obama regime have now all been promoted, especially if you were a Russia hoaxer, you've been promoted even higher. So that's kind of where it stands, I guess, Dinesh, to answer your question. I don't think we ever expected Obama's third term, even myself, to be this obvious as to where the shots are being called from. And that's coming from Kalorama, which is a street in Washington, D.C., very famous for having huge mansions, and that's where Obama lives. And my guess is that's where most of the shots are being called from, the play call, so to speak.
Now, most presidents, as you know, typically ceremonially leave D.C. Bush, of course, went back to Texas, but that's been the pattern. But with Obama, he installs himself right near the White House, almost as if he was expected to be making a kind of regular contact with those guys. But with Obama, it seems to me that even when he would produce disastrous policies, the Bergdahl trade, the Iran nuclear deal, there was always a kind of slick sophistication, a sort of savoir-faire. He'd make sort of Jesuitical distinctions between ISIS and ISIL. So at the end, you were sort of confused. It was difficult to pin the blame entirely on him. I think with Biden and Harris, we're seeing something very different, which is to say, these are people who just walk right into it. They seem to get blown up, but then they seem to keep going with no sense that they are antagonizing valuable even Democratic constituencies. Where do you think they're heading with this brazen indifference to the impact of their policies?
Well, look, when you control your propaganda machine and you create a bubble in your country like many dictatorships do or like the Chinese Communist Party does, it's no different than what we have seen here in California that's now went nationwide, where they control virtually all the content that gets created out there that you can find on the, you know, by just doing a search. 95% really is what I calculate it to be. But then when you run that through what I call a disinformation funnel, which are the social media companies, the tech oligarchs, you end up really poisoning the American people. But at the same time, you create a bubble for yourself. So the difference really between Obama and the Biden-Harris regime is that Obama was always smooth talking. You can not like what he says, but he was very, very clever, able to kind of smooth talk. He looked presidential. He acted presidential. And he had that gravitas about him. And this is somebody who I disagree with completely, but you can't argue that the guy can give a good speech. With Biden, he made horrible decisions over the last 50 years that he's been in Washington, D.C. So this is no surprise. You know, remember, they did not want him to run. Just like I said earlier, they had to prop him up because he was the only choice they had at that point. And then, of course, with Harris, she's totally untested. And what you're beginning to see is if you have an apparatchik who's never had to actually do anything their entire career, and all of a sudden you're a U.S. senator, all of a sudden you're a vice presidential candidate, all of a sudden you're the vice president, you get cackles and no clue. I mean, even if she was going to take a real try at solving the border crisis or any of these crises, she's just incapable. And that's why you're starting to see the decay there in the White House. So now my guess is that you've got the top national security advisor, domestic policy advisor, essentially trying to keep Biden out of the White House. That's probably why they created this Hollywood type studio. You keep Harris out of the White House. Now they've had to bring in childhood actors for her to put around her to try to do a production because neither one can articulate any message beyond 5 to 10, 15 seconds, if even that. You can't even find a soundbite to plug in to their propaganda machine at this point.
Well, it must be slightly encouraging, Devin, because with all this, think of it, you've got this overwhelming media, right? One-sidedness. And then you've got the digital censorship on top of this. And even they can't protect Biden. Even so, right. His poll numbers are horrific, which shows that the American people are maybe a little smarter and able to sort of see through this fog of propaganda and disinformation coming from the tech giants themselves. Is that a sign of hopefulness as we look to the midterm?
Well, it's hopefulness, but at the same time, people's lives are being destroyed. This country, the fabric of this country is being ripped apart by these poisonous people. So these tech oligarchs are extremely dangerous, right? I mean, in terms of how they censored the last election, you know, the information that was coming out from Hunter Biden's laptop to for years now censoring what conservatives put out on social media. You know, that's why I went to Rumble. That's why you're on Rumble, because we had nowhere else to go. And then, of course, when Parler was propped up, then Bezos took it out by deplatforming. It's now back going again, but it's not nearly at where it was a year ago. And what they're effectively doing is they're taking down our ability to communicate. You can't win wars, whether they're in the battlefield or the war for ideas, if our side can't even communicate amongst ourselves. So yes, Rumble's great. It's a key component because it's a video platform. But we are still struggling with the Facebook and Twitter and all of that to try to get our message across, even to ourselves, to communicate. So I'm optimistic, but at the end of the day here, Dinesh, you look at it and what they can't hide from is economic reality and international crisis reality. So you end up with 13 dead warriors because of their stupidity, because the Chi-Coms and the Russians and Al-Qaeda, they're all very sophisticated about propaganda because they do it themselves. So you end up with 13 dead people. You can't hide from that. People falling from aircraft. You can't hide from that. Even the fake news couldn't ignore that. Then at the same time, like out here in California, you can only drive by and see $5 gasoline, store shelves empty, fires burning. And while they run around claiming global warming for everything. So this has become a cultist party. Essentially, their main cults are they're either worshiping the global warming gods, blaming everything on global warming and climate change. And if they're not doing that, they're calling everybody a white supremacist, that this is another type of cult. And if those two cults don't work, then they just blame the Russians and try to smear us with the Russian nonsense.
When we come back, I want to do a shorter segment with Devin Nunes. We're going to talk a little bit about his efforts to strike back at dishonest, intentionally lying media. How did you choose which internet service provider to use? Well, the sad thing is most of us have very little choice because service providers operate like monopolies in the regions they serve. They use this monopoly power to take advantage of customers, data caps, streaming throttles, the list goes on. Worst of all, many service providers log your internet activity and sell that data to other big tech companies or advertisers. Now, to prevent service providers from seeing my internet activity, I protect all of my devices with ExpressVPN. This is why I love ExpressVPN. These guys are ingenious. They've created a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device on the internet. It's also very easy to use. You just fire up the app, click one button, and boom, you're protected. And it works on all your smart devices. So stop handing over your personal data to service providers and other tech giants who mine your activity and sell off your information. Protect yourself with the VPN I trust to keep me private online. Visit expressvpn.com/Dinesh. That's expressvpn.com/Dinesh to get 3 extra months free. Once again, go to expressvpn.com/Dinesh. I'm back with Congressman Devin Nunes, California's 22nd District, author of the book Countdown to Socialism. Devin, let me talk about this recent victory that you won in that the Eighth Circuit Court has allowed a lawsuit that you filed. This was against the left-wing journalist Ryan Lizza, but you've also had lawsuits against Washington Post reporter Ellen Nakashima. These are people, as far as I can tell, who have been brazenly lying about you, but then taking refuge in the idea that the libel laws are such that it's not even enough to prove that somebody lied. You have to prove that they acted with actual malice, with intentional disregard of the truth. Talk a little bit about why you decided to take on a difficult task, which is in an era of when it's hard to prevail in these suits, you decided to file them. Tell a little bit about these cases and where they stand now.
Well, the key has been that the fake news, like we talked about before, is just a propaganda arm of the left. And because I've been a target of theirs now going on for 5 years, because I exposed them, me and my team, I don't want to take all the credit, we exposed the Russia hoax, right? People are now going to jail because of the work that we have done. We fought them on their bogus impeachment claims, and I've stood up to them continually. So what's happened over time is they've gotten more and more outlandish with their fake news narratives that they not only inflict on me, but on my family, on my distant family, on anybody I did business with, and my staff. So, you know, it's to the point where it's become, you know, quite frankly, dangerous, right? It's dangerous to, you know, work in my office now. You know, we have to have security. We have to have all types of protocol because they write these fake news narratives and then they just hang out there forever and live and then are promoted by the tech companies. So they really left me no choice. And as you get into this, you know, I never really knew that much. I'm not a lawyer. I never knew much about the defamation laws, but you know, the point that you're making is a good one, that it's really ridiculous as you look at this, that somehow you and I as public figures are held to a different standard than average American citizens. And it's allowing this craziness of these fake news narratives where you basically make up stories on your fellow Americans. You take it out to your news agencies. You take it out to different law enforcement agencies. To try to dirty people up, stir the pot. And pretty soon, you know, you have half of America that believes that Donald Trump is somehow a Russian agent. And, you know, we still, even just recently last week, Dinesh, we had Nancy Pelosi on the floor making crazy Russian allegations. So this is something that has to stop. I'm thankful that the courts are now stepping in to hold these people accountable, because you just can't make up stuff out of whole cloth because you don't like me.
Yeah,
like my politics.
Let's look at the specificity of it. So Ryan Lizza writes an article in Esquire in which he says that your family sold your California farm and moved to a part of Iowa to run a dairy where you're able to use illegal immigrant labor. Now, will you address the veracity of that? Where did he even get was this just made up out of whole cloth? Because it appears like the court isn't even testing the veracity of it. They seem to assume, yes, it is a lie. And the only question is, does this guy have the right to put out these lies if he didn't know that they were outright lies? Talk a little bit about the allegation itself so people have a feel.
Yeah, I think the key is that, as you know, I'm from California. My family farms just about a mile from here. My grandmother, my grandparents founded the farm. It's where I work. My brother, nearly 2 decades ago, decided that he wanted out of California. And so he ended up moving to Iowa, and he's been there. I have, you know, 3 nieces there. Well, through the course of the media attacks on me, they descended onto his farm, harassing him, stalking him, my nieces. I mean, it was really crazy stuff. And then this, you know, the story comes out that I've got some secret that I'm hiding, which, of course, there's no secrets, as you know, Dinesh. Everything I do is public. People know that I have a small interest in wineries that are here in based here in California. So the fact that you would go and then and try to mix me up with a family member, lie about the family member because you hate me, is quite preposterous. And I think that's what the Eighth Circuit really said was, is, look, this is clear. You can't just go in and start, you know, tying a bunch of loose facts together that look like they're true separately, but in fact, they're not, right? They knew that I had nothing to do there. They knew they had no witnesses. They had nothing. They just fabricated the whole damn story. And so, look, now they have their ability now to prove if they have any evidence of this, which they do not, they will not. And for my case, I look forward to a jury trial here because it's the only way that I have to clear my name is go to a jury of our peers and let them bring a verdict down on these fake news companies. And more Republicans need to not only challenge these fake news companies, but they also should not even be talking to these fake news companies. They should acknowledge them for what they are, which is a propaganda arm of the Democratic Party.
I think that is an absolutely key point, which is to say that these are not really media in the traditional sense of the term. They're not a critical eye on government. They're not a check on power. They're in it with the other side, and they don't hesitate to put out outright lies. Devin Nunes, good luck with this suit. I certainly hope it not only advances, but that it ultimately leads to the overturning of the New York Times versus Sullivan decision, which has made it such an obstacle for people who are wronged in flagrant ways to be able to get justice at the hands of the court. Thanks very much for joining the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dinesh.
When Debbie and I talked to Dr. Douglas Howard, the founder of Balance of Nature, he said, guys, you're a long way from being healthy if you aren't eating enough fruits and veggies in your diet. He said, try Balance of Nature. Just see how it makes you feel. Well, let me tell you, we feel great. Lots of energy to get us through our busy days. We take 10 daily servings of the fruits and veggies. They're all in 6 small capsules. They're absolutely no trouble swallowing. Always fresh, nothing artificial. They smell great. And Debbie swears by the fiber and spice. I was finally convinced to take it myself. We're really liking it. Invest in your health. Invest in your life. Join me and experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself for years to come. For a limited time, all new preferred customers get an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code America. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code America. I got to say, I'm really enjoying the spectacle of Kamala Harris and the kid actors, all of them talking in a sort of a serious tone about the space program. So this is fantastic. I mean, it started out, of course, with this video released by NASA for Space Week. And it appeared to be one of these students from around the country who love the space program show up to talk to Kamala Harris. And of course, this is all a part of a way to sort of make Kamala Harris look good. I mean, the Democrats have a big problem here. The big problem here is they've got kind of a clown in the Oval Office. And so in the back of their mind, they're thinking, maybe we should do a handoff to the other clown. But what if the other clown is in a way crazier, cringier, creepier, more ditzy and more out of it than the first clown? So this is sort of a little bit of a put Kamala on the stage situation, but they realize we can't put Kamala. She's so unnatural. She doesn't even know how to have a normal conversation without, you know, so they're like, listen, let's get some kid actors. This is great. So they get YouTube to screen these actors by going through different types of casting agencies. Here's this one actor. And he basically goes, my agent called me. So these aren't real kids. I mean, they're real kids, but they're kids who are basically, who know how to play a part. And think of how silly this is. I mean, I don't know kid actors these days because I don't watch the stuff that they'd play in. But some other kid is watching, going, wait a minute, isn't that the kid from Home Alone? Isn't that the kid I saw on this? Isn't that the kid I saw on that? So these actors are there. It's all staged. It's all scripted. And it was busted because one of the kid's parents pointed out that not only was his kid an actor, but all the other kids in the script were actors. And of course, the performance by Kamala was predictably pathetic, including, well, here's a little clip to give you just a feel for the mood of the occasion. Listen.
One of the things I'm most excited about, but the other, you guys are going to see. You're going to literally see the craters on the moon with your own eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
With your own eyes. I'm telling you, it is going to be unbelievable. So that's one of the things we can do here, too.
It's going to be unbelievable. You're going to see craters on the moon. Now, first of all, these kids are going to an observatory in the middle of the day. You're not going to see the moon, let alone see craters on the moon. To do that, you've got to go at night. So, and she goes, this will be unbelievable. Yeah, it will be unbelievable because you can't see it. You'll be truly, it's truly unbelievable if you can. Look, the thing about this is that, you know, the reason they need actors is they can't afford to have even normal people. Because normal people could spring something on Kamala and then she'd be like totally embarrassed, right? So Kamala, what's it like to have a slave ancestor? Oops. So Kamala, listen, you know, is it true these rumors that you slept your way to the top? Oops. So they don't want any of this. They just want totally scripted performances. They want things like, so when did you realize that a woman could do anything with her life? You know? So this is the world that they've created. It doesn't resemble the real world at all. It's a scripted world. Biden's part of the script, by the way. Look at his set. You know, he's sitting in there. It appears like there's the White House right behind him. It's not the White House. It would be like this studio. You know, it looks like Dinesh is sitting, you know, at home. You know, no, I'm in a studio. So this is an administration that relies on fakery. And the really good news is that we, the American people, are actually pretty good. We've got pretty good fakery monitors. And we have come to see through the disguise. Despite all the media camouflage, despite all the media cover-up, we can see that what we have as president and vice president are two total fakes. Inflation is already running hot, right at the highs of the last couple of decades, and now the Democrats are trying to push through another massive spending plan, $3.5 trillion. Well, here's the deal. If you think money grows on trees like our government does, well, just keep living in ignorance. But if you're freaked out, as I am, about the impact this additional spending is going to have on already high inflation, it's time to protect your savings now. Diversify a portion of your savings into gold and silver with Birch Gold Group. Now, if you haven't reached out to Birch Gold to diversify part of your IRA or 401k into a precious metals IRA, do it today. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. They have an A-plus rating with a Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews and thousands of happy customers. Talk to them, have them help you safeguard your investments. Text Dinesh to 484848 to claim your free information kit and to speak with a precious metals expert in holding gold and silver in a tax-sheltered account. Again, text Dinesh to 484848 and protect your savings today. Wokeness, I think most of you know, is not simply an American phenomenon. It started, it sort of cooked up here, but it spread rather promiscuously all over Europe and in some places even beyond Europe. It's in Canada, it's in Australia, and it's infected a lot of our institutions, but not all. And it's good to see that there's some powerful pushback coming from sometimes unexpected quarters. I mean, the French. You know, ooh la la, merci. The French are pushing back against wokeness. They've basically said no wokeness in France. And Macron, the French prime minister, is on board with this. So it's a bipartisan thrust in France against wokeness. And even in England now, there's going to be, and there is some mounting pushback. And I want to talk about, it's good to see these things. I like to show how they play out on the ground. Cambridge University has just fired, essentially pushed out its vice chancellor, who was just hired a few years ago, by the way, as a huge kind of outside academic superstar to remake Cambridge University, kind of bring it into the modern era. Now, first of all, if I were representing Cambridge, I would say to myself, I've got the second oldest university in the English-speaking world. I've got the wealthiest university in Europe. I have 121 Nobel laureates, 47 heads of state, 14 British prime ministers. Sir Isaac Newton went here. Sir Francis Bacon went here. Charles Darwin went here. Francis Crick, James Watson, Alan Turing, Stephen Hawking, to mention some of the more recent names from science. So this is a university with nothing to prove. But nevertheless, they brought in this Canadian guy, named Toop, T-O-O-P-E. And this fellow Toop was the director. He was the dean of the law school at McGill University. He was also at the University of Toronto. He was at the University of British Columbia. So he's a Canadian who was one of the top-ranked university guys. And he was also on Canada's Royal Commission on Aboriginal People, which should have been a little bit of a tip-off to the Cambridge people that you might be bringing in some kind of a left-wing kook. And sure enough, when Toop shows up, we find out that he is indeed a massive kook, because he comes into Cambridge and he starts implementing policies to block free speech, promote what he calls an anti-racist agenda. He declares war on microaggressions. He develops something called the Change the Culture Program, and a rebellion began to brew at Cambridge. And not just right-wingers, but mainstream Cambridge scholars were like, listen, we're not going to tolerate any of this. So let's look at some of this. Toop comes in his inaugural address. He goes, the big question he's going to be dealing with is, quote, how do we guarantee we're a fully inclusive university? Fully inclusive. Inclusive of what? The whole point is, it's easy to use these terms. You're trying to include everybody? Or you're trying to get the best students and the best teachers so that you can have a university that's prepared to train leaders of society. In any case, Toop goes on to issue a freedom of speech statement in which he basically says that in the name of civility, there are going to be strict curbs on free speech. Interestingly, the rebellion against this was led by a philosophy professor, appears to be a Muslim guy, Arif Ahmed, who says, this is nonsense. We are not going to be constrained by some civility requirement imposed by you, some, you know, Canadian. We want to be able to speak our minds. And so this was basically shot down. Then Toop blocked Jordan Peterson from getting an appointment at Cambridge after some left-wingers began to complain. And this was not well received, and a group of other Cambridge scholars made sure that Peterson at least came and spoke, even though Toop was successful in preventing him from getting any kind of an appointment. Then Toop announces the Change the Culture campaign, in which he says, you can't do any more microaggressions. And here's an example of a microaggression, in case you're wondering, what's a microaggression? It goes, for example, raising an eyebrow when a black staff member or student is speaking. Black student speaks, you go, microaggression. I do this all the time with the podcast. You people watching can be like, all these microaggressions today. I'm going to watch somebody else's podcast. So once again, Cambridge was like, are you kidding me? Is this a university environment? Is this a serious individual? And then the last straw was, and it turned out that this guy Toop was essentially hustling China for money. There was a big article actually that appeared with the headline, How China Bought Cambridge. And this, of course, offended the pride of the scholars at Cambridge, this idea that we're like a fully owned subsidiary of Beijing. Xi Jinping is now going to be, you know, monitoring our Change the Culture program. So it was quite enough for this guy, Toop, and he's basically been given the boot. Douglas Murray, by the way, commenting on this in the London Spectator, he goes, he's leaving because he's no good at his job, and everybody knows it. So this is a happy case where you've got a woke guy who comes in thinking he's going to be surrounded by accolades, and it turns out he is wrecking the university. Fortunately, the university figures this out and politely or impolitely, I guess lacking civility, shows him the door. I want to challenge you to become a MyPillow super shopper like Debbie and me. We don't just patronize MyPillow. We go all out to support Mike Lindell, and we're happy to do it because he's a great guy and he makes great products. Now, Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to make it easy for you to be a super shopper yourself. How? By giving you great deals. For example, he's offering right now a buy one, get one free offer on the Giza Dream Sheets. He's also offering up to 66% off on all kinds of other products. So all these MyPillow products products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Call 800-876-0227. That's 800-876-0227. Or go to MyPillow.com to get the discounts. You got to use promo code Dinesh. I don't really do very many so-called how-to segments on the podcast, but I want to do one now because I saw an article in the New York Times, of all places, by Tim Herrera, a pretty interesting article, and I was thinking about the context for it to sort of lay a little groundwork for it. You know, if there's one characteristic distinction between the left and us, we're all about success. We're all about getting it done. And ideally getting it done uncomplainingly, whereas they're all about explaining why it can't be done. They're all about explaining why it's an impossible and we're all victims, and particularly those of us like me, you know, you're a person of color, Dinesh, you can't possibly get it done. So even as we do get it done, they're standing around, typically these white wokesters, to explain why it can't be done or why you can't possibly do it, and it's because, of course, we live in a racist society. But those of us who take on projects, and particularly projects that are difficult, complex, multi-layered, hard, in life, any kind of project, it can be even something like repairing a relationship. It can be something like building something new, creating a new type of business. It can be writing a thesis. This is hard. These are hard things to do. And in fact, even getting started is hard. And sometimes getting started is the hardest thing of all. Why? Because we have a human tendency to, you know, to shirk, to postpone. I'll get to tomorrow. So how do you overcome this? How do you get to the first step that will enable you to get to the second step? And that's what this article is about. It's called Micro Progress and the Magic of Just Getting Started. And it makes a very kind of scientific point. And that is that if you try to take on a big task, and you assign the satisfaction of it to the completion of the task, there's a kind of a deterrence to getting started. But if you take that exact same big task and you break it up into 10 tasks, into measurable units, let's call them micro units, and you set yourself, the first goal is to get started and to finish the first unit, not the full task, but the first part of the task. So if you're writing a thesis, it may simply be coming up with a topic. That's all you have to do. That's your initial goal. And the idea here is that if you reach that goal, you come up with a topic, your mind then delivers a certain measure of kind of satisfaction, of a sense of accomplishment, a dopamine kind of push to your mind that then motivates you to go to the second part of the task. So, in fact, the writer here talks about, he invokes Newton's laws of motion. He goes, objects in motion tend to stay in motion. What he means is, like, if you don't start the job, it'll never get done. But it's kind of like once you get into the river and you start moving your hands and moving the oars, the canoe begins to propel forward. That doesn't cross the whole river. It just starts moving. And the next step is to get from here to there and from there to there and there to there. And pretty soon you are now on your way to crossing the river. So the idea is start being productive at whatever task you're attempting, and you will then find it easier to keep being productive, because what you're really doing is you're sort of tricking your brain. Your brain normally is waiting for the final result to deliver that sense of satisfaction, but if you set intermediate goals, my goal for today is coming up with the topic. My goal for the next couple of days is merely to start writing an outline. My next goal, having written the outline, is simply to write the first page. And so by approaching things in this micro-progressive manner, you make sure that A, you get out of the gate, B, you start with the task at hand, and all of this is going to make it much more likely that you're going to get to the finish line. I want to conclude today my discussion of James Madison and his contribution to the making of America. This is part of my PragerU video series. You can watch all these videos, 5 of them, at PragerU.com. Here's a clip from the Madison video, just to give you a feel for what it sounds like. The preamble to the American Constitution begins with the phrase, "We the people." But could the people of America be counted on to do the right thing all or even most of the time? The principal architect of the Constitution, James Madison, gave this question a great deal of thought. His answer was a decided no.
No. And Madison, by the way, was not alone. I think all the founders
to varying degrees, had this, I would call it, low view or skeptical view of human nature. Not totally skeptical, by the way. Essentially, Madison and the founders thought of humans as intermediate between sort of the angels and the devils. So we're not good enough to be angels. And in fact, famously in the Federalist Papers, Madison writes, "If angels were to govern men, neither external nor internal controls on government would be necessary." So the task of government, says Madison, the great difficulty lies in this. You must first enable the government to control the governed. That's majority rule. And in the second place, oblige it to control itself. And it's to this problem that Madison sets his peculiar youthful genius. Here's Madison again. "Whenever there is an interest and power to do wrong," he says, "wrong will generally be done." So how do we control this problem? The problem is, by the way, the tyranny of the majority. Because let's remember that the idea of a democratic society was presented as an alternative to tyranny. Let's take the power from the one, the king in England, and give it to the many, the people. And Madison now raises the question, who's going to protect us from the people? Which is to say, who's going to protect us from the majority using its power against the minority, to take the possessions of the minority, to curtail the freedom of the minority? This, by the way, appears to be the Biden agenda. They're trying to say, yeah, we're going to use democracy to make you do this and make you do that. And so Madison was alert to this. Nothing could be more relevant than Madison's solutions to this problem. He wants to try to prevent tyrannies, not just to block tyrannies once they are established, but to prevent them from being established in the first place. Now, how do we do that? Madison offers five ways, and I'm going to enumerate them very quickly. First, a written constitution. And the written constitution is a super law. And by super law, I mean it overrides the will of the majority. Madison is sometimes called the father of the constitution. Why? Because he's the one that got the constitution through, that got it passed. And one of the things that the constitution specifies really clearly is the power of the government is limited. It's not unlimited. Even if it's empowered by the majority, they can't do anything. They can do this, this, and this, but nothing else. Now, let's remember, prior to the American Constitution, no country had a constitution, a written constitution that had this kind of super legal authority. America was the first. Second, Madison pushed through, and he was really the architect of this, the Bill of Rights. Jefferson supported the Bill of Rights, but Jefferson wasn't present when the Constitution was being debated and was being approved. So Jefferson advocated from a distance, but Madison is the one who got it through. Other people, like Hamilton, by the way, opposed a Bill of Rights, not because Hamilton was against rights. Hamilton thought the Constitution is a Bill of Rights. Why do we need a Bill of Rights that says government can't do this and that? Because we haven't given the government the power to do any of those things. But the Bill of Rights has proved to be, over the years, a very valuable check on majority power. And if courts are vigilant in enforcing these rights, as they should be, protect free speech, protect the Second Amendment right to bear arms, protect the Fourth Amendment right against unreasonable search and seizure, and so on, these rights are to be protected against the majority. Then, representative government. The idea here that we don't have a direct democracy, we elect people and they act, in a sense, in our stead. Madison said that America is, in a sense, a republic rather than a democracy. Why? Because of this particular feature of the people not ruling directly as in ancient Athens, but ruling in a filtered way through representatives. Next, separation of powers. Now, Madison didn't invent this. You can read this in Montesquieu, the European thinker, in The Spirit of the Laws, the idea of dividing power between a legislature, an executive, and a judiciary. Madison and the founders strongly believe that where the legislature, the executive, and the judiciary are one, that's the very definition of tyranny. They don't have to do anything. Just by being one, you have a tyrannical government. And notice that this is actually what the Biden administration wants to do. They would love to have an executive, a legislature, and a judiciary that are, in a sense, one, that are acting in cahoots with each other and are acting to support each other and push the same agenda. So, not just separation of powers, which I mentioned, but also checks and balances. And interestingly, this is something that Montesquieu didn't come up with. Montesquieu came up with the separation, but what was added to this is not only do you have separation, each branch can kind of oversee the other. So to take an example of this mutual oversight, Congress can make a law, but the president can veto it. And vetoes can be only overridden by a kind of congressional supermajority. Now, the president and his executive branch can enforce the law, but there's congressional and judicial oversight. The judiciary is appointed, not elected, but the judiciary is nominated, the Chief Justice and the Associate Justices by the President. They have to be confirmed by the Senate. So here you see, it's not a complete list, but I'm giving you an idea of Madison's philosophical statesmanship. He says that you need, quote, inventions of prudence to do what? To supply what he calls the defect of better motives. Because human beings are not angels, we need to have institutional ways to check power. And Madison's constitutional architecture, I think, a work of profound genius, a great gift to subsequent generations. But of course, the constitutional architecture only works if we use it.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.